From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. Now, a story that began almost 30 years ago and ended just a few weeks ago. It's told by two women, Jean Kerr Taylor and Regina Louise. Their story begins with Regina. Today, she's a successful business owner and the author of a memoir. She was born 40 years ago in Austin, Texas, but she spent most of her life in the cities and towns around San Francisco.
From the time I can remember, I lived with a woman. She, to the best of my knowledge, was someone that people in the surrounding areas would take their unwanted children to and barter with her, you know, as to the best price for her to take care of their unwanted children. And at 12, I decided I'm going to take matters into my own hands. And I basically turned myself into a police department. They, in return, took me to the Edgar Children's Shelter. And it was at that time that I met an amazing woman, and I fell in love with her.
When I was working as a counselor at Edgar Children's Shelter, she was one of the residents, and I just loved her sparkle, her everything she did with her whole body, heart, and soul. And she was always honest. And I just really, I loved that. And we just enjoyed being with each other.
She would take me places. She would take me, like, to the ballet and to the symphony and out to dinner and to dinner parties. And she would take me home for the holidays to her family's house.
And then when Regina was put into different foster homes, we would spend hours on the telephone until our mouths couldn't talk anymore. We just really loved, you know, each other's presence.
And by that time, I had lived in probably, I had visited or lived or tried to live in approximately 36 foster homes, group homes, residential treatment centers. So
she told me that her mother did not want her anymore. When I first got the idea to adopt her was just by being with her in her presence, because I wanted to give her stability and an environment which would be the most beneficial to help her realize her potential and grow. So I wanted to petition the courts, and I did petition the courts to be her foster parent.
And this is, you know, late, no, middle 70s. And at that time, bylaws were passed at the Black Social Workers Convention that African-American children should remain in African-American homes. So cross-racial adoption was not very big. So she was told, no, you can't have her. So needless to say, I was shipped to another residential treatment center.
And we corresponded via letters. And then when I didn't hear any response to any of my letters, and when I knew that she was becoming a teenager, or she was a teenager, and I knew that the last time I had seen her, how excited she was to be with her peers, I felt that that I needed to not push my wish to be together on her. I found out later she never received any of my letters.
She and I basically lost contact. So in that time, I emancipated when I was 19, and with a glad garbage bag, I arrived at San Francisco State in a taxi, and I spent many years there, and then I went on to build a business as a hairstylist. I have two salons in the Bay Area. And that was great, and it was all wonderful, but there came a point when I needed to take a look at my life. I needed to take a look at myself, and I missed her. I missed her so, so much. There wasn't a day in my life that I did not think about her. And secretly, I would look for her. You know, late at night, I'd kind of sneak out of bed, and I'd go online and get on to People Search, Advanced Search, and I'd always come up empty-handed. And I remember one of my clients saying, I think there's some Kerrs at Rossmore, which is a retirement community. And I remember writing up a flyer, you know, if you know a Kerr, Jean Kerr, by all means, please call me at this number because you never know, she could be at Rossmore. I called every cur between here and Turlock. I think I found something like 3,000. I took the time to email all of these people over, you know, probably a year, and nothing ever turned up. And I meet this new friend who is a journalist for Wired magazine. And so I gave her Jean's birth date. I gave her as much information as I could give her. And within 24 hours, she had a list of 300 names. And there was this one name that popped out. The birthday was August 15th. She was born in the 40s. And the most recent address was an address in Fort Campbell in Kentucky. And I was like, Fort Campbell, Kentucky, because I remembered her husband was in the military. I knew that. So I sat down and I decided to write this letter. And the letter basically said, to whom it may concern, if you were once a counselor who wanted to adopt a little brown girl about 23 years ago, I have something that I would like to share with you. And it came back addressee unknown. And I thought, that's it. I got to give this away. And I thought, you know, she could have called me. She could have tried to find me. And I can't do this anymore.
I was in Alabama and my coworker and my partner when I worked at Edgar Children's Shelter in Martinez, California, who I had not heard from nor seen in over 25 years, called me on the telephone. She said, do you remember? She said, Regina, your Regina, has written a book and she's has a website. And she shared the website information, and as we were talking, I got on the website, and it took my breath away. 25 years ago, the courts had denied my petition to be her foster parent. And the social work services system said that I was harming her. I was told that I was hurting her chances to grow up and to be a functioning adult. And as someone who loves a young person, a child, your child, the one thing you want most of all is for them to grow up healthy and happy. And that is the one thing I wanted for her more than anything in the world. So, when I heard about her as an adult, I was so delighted that she was happy and healthy.
All I really wanted was to find someone, be it Jean Kerr, be it anyone who could have known me, you know, many, many years ago, and who could have said to me, I'm proud of you, you know, based on the fact that I'd written a memoir and I'm okay, I'm breathing, I'm successful. And I went upstairs, I turned on my computer because I needed to do some work, and there is an email with the banner, I am so proud of you, sweetheart. I couldn't take it in, you know, I'd lost my footing, and the air that I would normally breathe in so easily became challenging, and I just tried to sit with that, and I decided I'm going to call her, and I called her. And I was like, hi. May I speak with Jean Kerr? She's like, oh, sweetheart, is that you? And I didn't know how to respond. And I just sat there. She's like, sweetheart, is that you? She said, you know, I never stopped loving you. You were my first child, and I never stopped loving you. I just listened, and I just said, you know, you're my mommy. She's like, yes, I know. You are my baby.
When she called and said she had been looking for me, and I thought, my goodness, I wasn't lost. You know, I mean, I was there all the time. How could she not find me? I mean, it was an anomaly to me. You know, here I was not trying to hide. And if she'd been looking for me, I was surprised.
And we reunited in New York in July.
And I couldn't think of anything I could give her because all I had was my heart. And then I remembered the pictures.
And when she got off the plane, she handed me a photo album, and I didn't have any photos of myself as a baby, as a child, as a teenager. Well, when she hands me this photo album, I open it up, and inside were the 5 years, 25 years ago, of the life we spent.
The different places that where she was, and the different hairdos she had, and the different outfits. It was like they were capturing the birth of our relationship.
You know, we made our way eventually down to Alabama, where she is from, and I met the rest of her family, her husband and son, and
I was just thinking, I remembered how my father adopted me when I was 21, and I had no idea he wasn't my natural father. I felt that he was giving me a gift that I could offer to her, and I asked her if she would like to be adopted. At 20, after one becomes 21, there are no legal systems one has to go through in order to ask permission, and we are both consenting adults, and we have the power to choose who is our parent and who is our child. And we were always parents. She was always my little girl. She was my first child.
So on November the 20th, 2003, my mom, Jean Kerr Taylor, and myself were adopted. And I remember when we were speaking over the phone when we first reunited, she said, "I noticed that you use Regina Louise when you write." I said, "Yes, I had to give away my last name because it really didn't belong to me." And she said, "Well, you can have mine if you so choose." And I took her last name. And one of the things that really makes that a special thing for me is when I was in college, I would have to fill out the forms, you know, whether it was in college or whether I worked, and it said who to call in case of an emergency. I would write her name down and give a false number just so I could feel a sense of connection because I didn't know her number. So I would use Jean Kerr as my mother, and now I have her as my mother.
So 25 years after the time that I petitioned the courts to be her mother, I legally became her mother, and it's irrevocable. We are mother and daughter, and will be for the rest of our life.
Jean Kerr Taylor and Regina Louise Kerr, who's author of the book Somebody's Someone.